This is an audio recording of the FinTech Nexus weekly news show. The show is streamed live on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Twitter at 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday. In this fast-paced show, the FinTech Nexus news team and a special guest discuss the most important news stories of the past week. Now let's get on with the show.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the FinTech Nexus weekly news show. My name is Peter Renton, chairman and co-founder of FinTech Nexus, joined as always by my good friend and colleague, Todd Anderson. How are you doing, Todd?
I am well, Peter. I don't know if I still have a tan from Miami, but I'm doing well.
Yes. Todd and I were in Miami.
Shameless plug.
We're in Miami this week for our Dealmakers East event. It was fantastic. I loved being in Miami in February, let me tell you.
Yeah, I wish I was there.
Yes. Joining us for the umpteenth time, we have Andrew Dix, founder of Crowdfund Insider. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me over today.
Of course. Busy week of news we got to get to. So we're going to kick it off today with... I think we're going to start with earnings. A firm released earnings yesterday, and it wasn't so much the earnings were terrible, it's that they laid off 19% of their workforce, 485 people or thereabouts. Revenue was up, active consumers are up, their loss, they had deeper losses, I think, than expected, and certainly way deeper than a year ago. Actually didn't look to see where it actually finished, but it was down a bit, trading down like around 18% today, for most of the day. It's, Affirm has, I think, a great name. They've got some really major deals, with Walmart and Peloton and what have you, but they're yet to be able to prove they can actually turn a profit. So, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, when losses increase, that's they have to figure out a way to eventually make money. Mm-hmm. Especially when you go to an environment like the one we're in now, where it's just not easy to go out there and raise money. Even if you have a sound business and a sound management team, the investors are not going to be like, oh yeah, we trust you anymore. That's played into a lot of the layoffs. We're cutting costs and hopefully eventually turning a profit in a more expeditious way. But, a firm probably needs to diversify their business a bit more than it is today. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the direction they take that, but clearly, the focus on BNPL only is not leading to eventually making a profit, even if they're hitting so much scale.
Yeah, I think it was a miss on both the top and bottom line, which doesn't help. And then some firms have been getting a little bit of a pop when they say that they're going to slash costs,
right,
and cut exactly employees, and that didn't happen with a firm. And at the same time, they also quietly eliminated their crypto side business.
Yep.
It was just a very small, short line in their earnings report. I think that, I think Max Levchin is brilliant. I think it's kind of an interesting business. I just think there's too many companies out there doing the same thing in a terrible environment with competition increasing. And yeah. I think that in the near term, it's time for consolidation, and in the long term, few will survive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's I agree. I feel like we've got the product itself, buy now, pay later, is a popular product, but is it a business or is it a product line? That's the question you got to ask yourself. So there's too many
a product line.
More and more banks getting involved in this, including the largest banks. And
it's only going to spread the wealth more. And we've already talked about it on the show, I think. There's not much affinity to using BNPL. You're going to use whatever's in the checkout.
Right.
And so you're not going to go, oh, I'm an Affirm loyalist. No, if Affirm is the best deal, or if they have more partnerships with whatever retailers I'm going to. Sure, I'll use Affirm more, but I don't have an affinity to having to use Affirm.
Yeah.
I think that the future should be clear is that people, consumers, they don't want to use umpteen different platforms or businesses. They want one or two.
Right.
And the more valid services you can combine in a fintech, a neobank, a digital bank, or whatever you want to call it, super app, I think the better. Mm-hmm. And so all these options, I think both of you make great points. There's no affinity to Affirm. You use it in the checkout line. And Peter, I think that you know, is it a feature or is it business? Those are both, you know, very valid statements.
Okay, we're going to move on to Goldman Sachs in the news this week. They announced that they have raised a fund, pretty sizable, $5.2 billion, which is actually the largest ever growth equity fund, according to Bloomberg anyway. And it's $3.7 billion from outside investors. Goldman has been investing for years in growth equity firms, but they've done it off their own balance sheet. Now this is an outside fund, $1.5 billion roughly from partners of the firm and the firm itself. So the Goldman is putting some balance sheet into it, but this is the first time they've got sort of an externally managed fund. They're investing in enterprise software, fintech, which is obviously what we're interested in, and healthcare. Average investment's going to be around $50 million, looking at Series B to Series E. This fund has actually been investing for a while, but it is now public that it is, and it sounds like everything's been formalized. So super interesting move. Is Goldman going to be the A16Z of the next 5 years? Who knows?
Maybe. I'd be curious how fast they deploy some of this capital. It's going to be nice and slow and steady over the next few years, I would presume, mm-hmm. given where we sit today. But Goldman, they're, if not the smartest, some of the smartest investors out there. And so if I was a fintech, I'd be trying to figure out how to get in front of them at the right time. And I'm sure their diligence is not a two-step process. It's probably like a 150-step process. And so, fintech's got to be ready for that. But, Goldman in the market with new capital is only a good thing.
Yeah, I think I'd like to look at this in – thinking about the last earnings report, which was a big miss and one of the biggest misses Goldman's ever reported. You've had a retrenchment on their more innovative side of, services, Marcus. They've reorganized the entire bank, and it was a retreat, really. And maybe this is back to the knitting. There's a lot of dry powder on the sideline, money looking for a place to go. Goldman is great at investment banking and asset management. And I think, honestly, this is a good time to be looking at deploying capital,
right?
Because equity's on sale.
Yep.
You know, you buy when it's cheap and you sell when it's expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Although for what, the latest stage companies, there are still CEOs that I've had conversations with that still, they're not accepting a down round yet, because they don't really need the money yet. So, but if they can make it through, maybe they won't need it. But if not, Goldman's not going to drive you. They're going to drive a hard bargain. They're not going to really take an unrealistic valuation. You see, there hasn't been many moves by Goldman in the last year because it's been crazy, and Goldman doesn't like crazy. Anyway. Let's move on. There's some breaking news. We were going to talk about the Brian Armstrong tweet, talking about how the SEC is looking to ban crypto staking, and there's a whole bunch of articles that have come out about this one tweet. But Andrew, just before we came to air, you managed to put out an article very quickly, it seems, about Kraken. So tell us about Kraken.
Yeah, Kraken got nailed, and there were rumors that Kraken was in the firing line, which, they came true. And I'm pretty certain that Brian Armstrong knew that Kraken was going to get taken down today. So effectively, the SEC has decided that staking is some sort of type of security. Kraken settled for a $30 million penalty without, you know, denying it nor, you know, admitting to the actual charges. And for all U.S. clients and accounts, staking is no more. They're being de-staked. For international accounts, you can still do it. I think that Armstrong's tweets is just kind of an indicator of the frustration of the industry in general. Coinbase has some sort of staking service. You have to wonder what they're going to do. Is staking a security or is it not? It doesn't matter. The SEC has decided you can't fight the feds. So it's a tough day for Kraken, tough day for crypto exchanges in the United States.
Mm-hmm. In some ways, I feel like, you know, the SEC and a few others, either in Congress or the regulatory agencies, were kind of waiting for an FTX type blow up to say, you know, let's lay the hammer down and let's eliminate either some or a bunch of these types of products that A, that they don't maybe fully understand, or B, that, you know, kind of play somewhat in the gray area instead of working with them to maybe, you know, figure out what the pathway forward is. They took the FTX news and said, you know what, there's got to be more scammers, there's got to be more illegal money or you know, something of that ilk, and we're just going to keep hammering away, because it feels like, you know, the Fed decision on Custodia, then you have this decision, it feels like it's just one after another after another, and it's all post FTX where this, like, the hammer is just being laid to certain actors in the industry, and I'm sure there's some that are playing by, you know, within the boundaries of how they know to play and are willing to work with regulators, but the regulators are just saying nope.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I just wonder what's going to happen to, like, you know, Ethereum went from proof of work to proof of stake, and I know you've got to have 32 ETH to become like a validator or whatever, but then you get staking rewards. Is that all illegal now? I mean, they talk about they really wanted to move from proof of work to proof of stake, but now they're saying, well, you kind of, I mean, what's going to happen there? That's going to be no more American validators. Is that what we're going to have?
I think that's a big question, and I'm glad you pointed out. There's one last thing I wanted to add is in the complaint, which I blasted through very quickly, there's no indication of fraud or malfeasance.
Right.
So nobody was hurt in this. There was no, you know, claim of criminal activity. It was just the SEC decided to put the hammer down, and they did so today.
Yeah. Well, I think we might be seeing the beginning of the end for staking in this country, which is going to be, yeah, I mean, I don't know what that's going to do to Ethereum, but it's not going to be good. Anyway, let's move on. Robinhood was in the news this week. Also talking about the SEC. They're very popular, the SEC in fintech and crypto. So we knew about this proposal the SEC put out about a, you know, overhaul of the stock market, the way some of the things have done. They put out, this was in December, they released their proposals. First time Robinhood's officially commented on it, and basically they're not happy. They think that this is all about the payment for order flow. Robinhood still gets a good chunk of their revenue, more than a third of their revenue from payment for order flow. They are diversifying. That percentage seems to be coming down over time. But you know, the SEC wants to limit revenue to 5 cents per 100 shares. And Robinhood makes between 5 and 10 times that. So it would be a huge hit to their revenue base. They're talking about, you know, maybe the end of commission-free trading. Those of us who are old enough to remember when you used to have to pay, you know, well, $29.95, I think it was, when I opened up my eSchwab account in like 2003 or whatever. But it's still a, you know, it's a bad, you know, it's one of those things that bad for Robinhood. I think maybe they can come to some sort of agreement, but the SEC doesn't seem to be acting quite unilaterally these days, it seems.
I'll let you go first, Andrew.
Yeah, it's a bit of a head scratcher. Everything I've read about payment for order flow, and it is, and there is competition out there, is that the numbers indicate that it does generate value for the traders.
Yeah.
And they're getting the best costs in the trade. That to me makes sense. If it's good for the individual trader, why not allow it? There was actually an article in Barron's, I think it was today or yesterday, that I quickly read the first paragraph that said, the numbers don't add up here, that the SEC is wrong. So I'm not quite certain, is this, the SEC virtue signaling? It doesn't matter what the results are. They're not going to let the facts get in the way. They just want to be seen as the hammer on Wall Street. It doesn't really make sense. But as you said, Peter, the SEC seems to be acting unilaterally these days. And if it's not this, it's something else.
Right.
And it's kind of crazy town at the commission. I don't know what's going on in F Street, but it's kind of off the rails.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it how the consumer is given a product for free. And yes, the platforms and those others that play after or in the background of trading, so to speak, or making money. I feel like this is actually a hit at the Citadels of the world who, famously, were quote unquote fixing everything around the time of Robinhood and the GameStop and everything. And then you come out and they've made a lot of money the last couple of years. And I feel like because of that end result, you have the pressure from Congress into the SEC. And they're not thinking of the regular everyday trader that now can do stuff for free on Robinhood. They're thinking because this exists, someone's making 5, 20, 50 times what they could the other way, and that shouldn't be allowed. It feels like it's the reverse should be really taken into consideration is the consumer has a really good experience and it's free. That should be the first bar, not the byproduct on the other side, which, people are going to make money in the markets. It feels like they're getting hit harder because they're making a lot of money versus what the SEC and maybe those in Congress who might pressure the SEC think they should be making.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to Andrew's point, like who is harmed here? I mean, they're saying that maybe that consumers are paying a little extra for their stock trades. I don't know if there's really some deep research done there because the consumers are trading more stocks because it's free. That's the bottom line. And again, it feels like the SEC doesn't seem to care if the consumer is not harmed. It just seems like they want to have the final say on things here.
Yeah, and the consumer has a choice. They don't have to trade with Robinhood. You can go to E-Trade or Schwab or whatever.
Yeah, I think Vanguard still charges for commission trading, I think. So there's lots of places you can pay for a commission trade if that's what you want.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of other platforms that do this. That it's not just Robinhood. I mean,
I know.
Who's the guy that runs Wealthfront, Andy Ratcliffe, or was the founder of Wealthfront? He's like, this has been going on forever.
Right, right. And Webull, a Hong Kong company, they are a big, big player too. So it's going to be big. And that's what the whole point of the article that was in the Wall Street Journal was saying that basically they're not, this is such a momentous change to the way the stock market operates and they haven't had enough input and haven't had enough time to consider.
So. They're going to discourage the everyday person who's now jumped into the market the last few years. And if they're going to have to start then paying per trade, or maybe per group of trades, however they might end up doing it, is going to discourage them from getting involved in the market in the first place.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. Anyway, want to move on. We don't normally talk about the private fintech companies getting a new CEO, but we're making an exception here with Pipe because Pipe has been so interesting to me since they had their co-CEOs all resigned, like the co-founders basically all resigned on the one day, and then someone else became CEO, and there's been musical chairs at the leadership there. Now they have a new CEO, a good friend of FinTech Nexus, Luke Voiles, who we've known from I first met Luke just after he started at Intuit, which was, probably 5-6 years ago now. And he was running the capital side of QuickBooks Capital. And then he moved to Square, leading up Square Banking with all their kind of business banking offerings there. Now he's going to be taking on, I think this is a momentous challenge. Pipe, you know, grew incredibly fast, had some things happen late last year, and there's been a leadership vacuum for several months. And now they have a leader, and it looks like Luke is up for an incredible challenge.
The only good thing I'd say is that it seems like there's a fair amount of money there in terms of either the money they've raised or the money they generate. So I think he's walking into quite the mess otherwise. But I think they're well capitalized and, you know, they're probably making a decent amount of money. I don't know if they're profitable just yet, but, you know, there's still a lot that we don't know about what happened with the co-founders. Yeah, and I mean, there was all these weird stories and a Bitcoin mining loan. Yeah. And so I'm sure it's a bit more dire than maybe even we were thinking of it today. And maybe they're not as well capitalized because of some of their missteps of the co-founders. But, you know, he's obviously a steady hand at the head now. And, you know, wish him success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like Luke has the right pedigree to right the ship. But it does sound like a heavy lift, especially in this economy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I did see that they added somebody from Zilch on the board. That's another one I don't quite get.
Well, Albert Perui, I know Al really well. You know, he's got deep experience in business lending as well. He came from Funding Circle. He spent like 7 years at Funding Circle, I think, and so he, you know, he's doing. Zilch is a, you know, another one of the BNPL. They got a slightly different flavor, started in the UK, but yeah, he's got deep business lending experience.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, again, like we discussed before, is this, you know, is it a feature or is it a business? And there's so many people out there trying to do the same thing right now. And a sinking economy. So I wish them all the best.
Yep, indeed. Okay, moving on. We're talking about another CEO. This is the other direction. This was breaking news literally an hour ago. Dan Shulman, who has been CEO of PayPal since 2015, announcement came out. I think they're reporting earnings. They were reporting earnings right before we came on air, I believe. So he has basically decided to retire. He is 65 years old. Looks good for 65. And he's, I didn't realize he was that old, but he's going to be retiring at the end of this year, and the search has begun for a replacement. That's going to be an interesting one of the, I mean, PayPal, yep, one of the highest powered fintechs of them all, going to have a new leader.
That's the more interesting angle. You know, who's next?
Yeah,
it's a big job. Head up PayPal. And kind of what is it going to be a known commodity? Is it going to be kind of a rising star in PayPal that maybe we don't know? You know, at least we don't publicly know just yet. You know, clearly PayPal has turned into one of the behemoths with Square and or Block, you know, and a couple of others.
Maybe they'll get Elon back. Bring Elon back. He needs some more work.
I think they said they have like 400 million wallets.
Yeah, a spare hour or two. Yeah, you know, so PayPal came out with earnings just before we hopped on this call. Okay. And as I mentioned before, I didn't really have a chance to dig through them. I think that the shares were ticking up after the announcement, which seemed initially positive, but I really don't think that we have, you know, full clarity until after the call, if not at a later date. Shulman, yeah, it's probably time for him to move on and somebody else to carry the baton forward. I think PayPal has a lot of potential, but I do think that they need some, you know, a different vision, you know, to take it in a new direction. I'm again going to emphasize that thesis. You need to be offering more services for your customers,
right,
not fewer. And I think a lot of this is going into, you know, certain channels and directions.
PayPal has so much potential. I feel like they got hundreds of millions of customers. They've got, I don't know, tens of millions of merchants, and they're not monetizing them as well as they could. And I think maybe a new CEO could supercharge.
And we're just entering like the age of the digital wallet wars.
Right.
And so it's, you know, the competition is only going to get higher and higher for the digital wallet.
Right. Okay, so we are going to go across the pond. It's another story that you wrote this week, Andrew, about the digital pound. It looks like there is a consultation, which is basically a request for comment that the UK government has put out. The digital pound has support, at least tacit support, from both the Chancellor, the Exchequer, and the Bank of England Governor, and many others. I think I'm very interested. It feels like they're further along than the US. They're basically saying, yes, we want to do this. There's going to be lots of privacy type guardrails in place, given what we know about the UK. And interesting to also, no decision has been made on whether this is going to be blockchain based or not, but interesting move. So tell us a little bit about what you found out, Andrew.
So I think you hit a lot of the high points there. I do think that they're further ahead than the U.S. Smaller market. It's been more innovation friendly. I give them credit for pursuing a challenging topic. The consultation, I think it ends in March or April. Correct me if I'm wrong. But no decision's going to be made until I think the end of the decade. So they'll come out with the results of this, and there'll be a lot of ruminating and discussion about it. As you mentioned, Peter, privacy is a huge issue. I would never want to hold a digital yuan. No. And it's a big issue in the United States. And I think it's one that may kill it. There's a lot of outstanding questions there. Like what happens to retail banks? Actually, the Bank of England did an excellent paper a few years ago asking that very question. You know, who holds those funds? Do you need to have a banking relationship going forward? I think there's a lot of questions. It'll be interesting to see how the Brits resolve these questions. More power to them. Whether this is the right thing or not, I don't know. I know in the U.S. when you have people like Circle, they believe a stable coin is a better path, because then you have that arm's length relationship with the government, because governments tend to get bigger and not smaller over time.
It's funny. I think if we had this story a year ago, I don't think anything about DLT would have been questioned.
Right.
And today it's like, oh yeah, we're not sure about that. It's still to be determined. It's like we felt like a year ago we were on this path of the
DLT everything.
The system was without a doubt going on the blockchain. And now today, and I still think a lot of stuff will go there. It's just like this new reticence towards it. And I think Andrew hit all the key points.
Anyway,
they have to be agnostic. The digital yuan, I don't think it uses any blockchain. So
right. Okay. Well, we're going to wrap with big news from Apple. Did you write this story, Andrew? I think you.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about the. Launching Apple Pay Later is currently being tested by 80,000 Apple employees. And it was supposed to launch. They made big fanfare. I think it was about a year ago. It was going to launch in June, and then it was going to launch in September, and it's still not launched. Clearly, getting into the lending business is not as easy as Apple, I think, anticipated, even though they've had a credit card with Goldman for a long time. So anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts, Andrew.
Yeah, so Apple typically is very methodical in their process. If it's not perfect, they don't want to release it. The only time they really, bollocked the release was with their first round of maps, and that guy got fired quickly. So they're very methodical in their process of making certain things work really well before they release them to the public. Because they're allowing their BNPL product to be utilized by their 80,000 retail employees, it means they're close. So that's interesting. It's an okay program. 6 weeks, you pay a little bit every week. You know, it's not really, a stretch for credit. The other interesting thing is the reveal was that they're planning to do an extended product. So they're going to they're going to be approaching a bigger credit product where you can pay over time, Apple Pay over time, where they will charge an interest rate. So that's another push into fintech. And when you add that with the interest-bearing account, which will be handled by Goldman, which is supposed to be launched soon, Apple ends up becoming more of a bank.
Yeah, they've got both sides then. They'll have both sides of the balance sheet. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think, you know, Apple's really staking a claim with the wallet on the phone. I'd be curious that the announcement a few weeks ago with the, you know, the Zelle Pay or Zelle Wallet, whatever it might be, is what do they end up doing when it comes to usage of cards inside the Apple Wallet? And will that hurt any of these Apple products if people have to move away from the Apple Wallet in order to use their bank cards? Or will there be some deal struck and it'll be kind of, you know, wallet to wallet? I don't know. But to me, I think that's a bigger thing, because if the banks take the cards out of the Apple Wallet, the Apple Wallet becomes a lot less attractive to the, you know, non-hardcore Apple lover. One, because you're still going to use your bank. I use my bank card in my Apple Pay wallet. I use Apple Pay all the time, but it's still my bank.
Right. Well, the wallet wars haven't even begun yet. They are going to begin in earnest sometime soon, and it's going to be really interesting. But that is a topic for another time. Anyway, that wraps it up for today. Thank you, everybody, for listening or watching. Appreciate your attention. Before we go, just a quick plug. FinTech Nexus USA is happening in New York City, May 10th and 11th. It's the biggest show on the East Coast this year, and it is going to be fantastic. Go to fintechnexus.com. Get your ticket now. We'll all be there. Yes. Okay. Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate you coming.
Thanks, Andrew. Today. Good to see you.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Todd.
Same time next week, 5 p.m. Eastern. And have a great weekend, everybody. See you.